This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Hey, Tom Ackerman here on a Thursday. Bernie Miklas is there. We have a full show for you, just the two of us. We are going to bring it today. I mean, let me tell you. I love talking baseball with you. There's some other thoughts on my mind, but if we get to it, but I know what our audience wants. They want the Cubs to go down this weekend. And to do that, you got to change a few things around here. Bernie, great to see you. How are you?
It's wonderful to be with you. You and I chat every Sunday morning on Sports on a Sunday morning. And I can't remember the last time that you and I, other than that, just did a show together, just the two of us. This is great.
That's right. Treat. We're going from a 10-minute segment to 56 minutes. So let's do it. yes. All right. Let me. So I, you know, I love this franchise and what this team stands for. And so do you. There's a lot of great history with this team. But I was a little disturbed by this Brewer series for a number of reasons. And I think I'll say the good stuff. Dustin May was great yesterday. He was great. Yeah, great. I mean, really special. And taking a no-hitter into the eighth inning, you should be rewarded. I will start with this, though, because I want to go back in history before we start pounding on the offense and this team is not hitting and they've got to pick it up and maybe they can spark it a little bit with a move in Memphis. I'm going to just tease that. But you and I covered Tony La Russa. We covered those teams in the 90s, in the 2000s, and I think it's not complicated. It really isn't. I mean, if a guy is dancing and gyrating, not to mention throwing, he started it, throwing up and into Herrera. Come on, right now. That's a star player now. You're throwing up and into Herrera. One of your guys is going to get it, period. And that's the end of the story. And the other team understands it, and it's over. I mean, for that not to happen actually surprised me, even with Ollie indicating that he doesn't do that or saying that he doesn't do that. That actually surprised me. I thought somebody would just take care of business and we just move on.
I totally agree. I actually was a little hot by, you know, I was kind of hot about that. Maybe you mentioned the great Tony La Russa, and maybe that's unfair because there's only one Tony La Russa. Shouldn't expect another manager to do everything that Tony did. Ollie has no obligation to do that. Tony was hardwired for every baseball game, 162 a year for how many years did he manage here? 16 years. But anyway, I can't tell you how many lengthy conversations I had with this about Tony La Russa, this topic. And it comes down to this. He said many times, different variations, he said, listen, we're a family. Our players are family. And just like in your real life, you wouldn't let anyone, you know, knock down one of your family members or hit one of your family members or punch one of your family members. You would punch back. You would hit back. You got to protect your family. And so he even said, listen, this is just common sense, because if the other side doesn't think you'll hit back or punch back, they'll just keep doing it. They'll just keep doing it and doing it and doing it because they don't respect you. You got to let them know right away. That's not how we do it here. You hit one of us, you're going to take one of my, you're going to hit somebody in my family. We're coming after somebody in your family. And that was his code. And it was a very honorable code. And I know people get squeamish about this and they say like, oh, I can't believe you're advocating that, you know, the Cardinals go, you know, headhunting, trying to hit a guy in the head with a 95. No. Tony La Russa's code was never, if you're going to do this, you never go. You got to keep it below the neck. You never go up, never. And he had a zero tolerance policy with that, with his pitchers. And there were many a pitcher who, when they went above the neck, delivering a message, they had to deal with Tony La Russa. He got all over him. So, listen, Tom, the other thing, and I don't mean to go on so long, you also got to factor this in. Not only that absurd display, I called it a freak show, clown show the other night. Not only that, and the guy was metaphorically speaking, that guy was basically spitting in their face. No respect whatsoever, right? The other thing you got to factor in is that Cardinals hitters this year have been hit by a pitch more than any team in the National League. And Cardinals pitchers are about league average in terms of hitting the other side. So if the other side, the other dugout thinks, well, wait a minute. Boy, these guys get hit by pitches all the time, and it doesn't look like they do anything about it. Well, they're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep doing it. And I got to be honest with you. You think of the world of Ollie. I like Ollie a lot. I think he's done a terrific job. But it bothered me, the one quote that he gave the writers, what he said, in effect, like they were asking him about retaliation. I never ask anyone to do that. I never had. Not in the minors, not in the majors, because somebody could get hurt. I just don't do that. And I thought, oh, my gosh, why don't you just, you know, hang a sign in the other team's dugout? Go ahead. Hit our guys. We're not going to retaliate. That's a bad move, man. All due respect to Ollie. Bad move.
Didn't we? Well, I did ask him. A listener asked him on Tuesday about the 38 times they'd been hit tied with the Angels. And he said, I can't quote him verbatim, but he said something like, that's probably not something that I should talk about on the show. And we were like, okay, understood. All he is aware of it. And I thought, all right, well, you know, somebody will get it then, or they know how to handle their business and they're going to move on. But I do think that I heard it multiple times that he was attempting to sort of put the thing to bed. Hey, we respect the other side. You know, we're good. Everything's fine. This thing is handled. No, it's not. I mean, it doesn't sit well with me that a guy like needed a stage with lights on him. He literally, like, Uribe turned to the, this wasn't like Carlos Zambrano, like, shooting his mouth off as he's walking off the mound or something and you know, throwing F-bombs around. This guy turned to the dugout and did his little dance. That doesn't fly. And somebody's going to hear about it. You know, I thought maybe Dustin May, he's not like an old veteran or anything, but he's a guy who, you know, strikes me as someone that doesn't take any crap from anybody. And maybe he would be the one to do it, but it didn't happen. But he did pitch well, and the Cardinals did their thing. And now I do wonder, you know, is there anybody in that clubhouse that would stand up and say, hey, because I guarantee you the teams that we covered then, not just Tony. I mean, you can just run down the list of pitchers from Klein to Carp to whoever who would have gotten up in front of that clubhouse and said, not today, boys. Who's doing it today? Who's going to take care of it? I'm pretty sure that was going on.
Yeah, you're 100% sure. You know, and I think this made it around town, but, you know, Steve Klein was on with Jim Hayes on Cardinal territory, and the cat asked Steve Klein, well, what should you do in that situation? And he said, you drill two of their guys. And Jim Hayes is like, two? He says, yeah, you hit their best hitter, and then you wait. Then you hit their second best hitter, and then you send a message. You let them know, get your guy under control. He can't be doing that stuff. Because if he does that stuff, and you don't go to him and say, stop it, okay? Stop it. If you don't take care of that, then you're going to get drilled. We're going to drill two of you. And that's Steve Klein. And Steve Klein lived by that code, too. And people say, well, nobody cares about a retired player. They're all like the old school. Yeah, they're old school in an honorable way. But that's exactly how you handle those situations. And the other little thing about this, not a little thing, but I want to point out, too, that what Yvonne Herrera said after the game was, he explained why he was upset. You know, you don't go up it towards his head. And especially it's a game 6-0. You just don't do that. So he thought the guy was irresponsible. But he said something that jumped out at me. He said, well, hopefully we'll take care of this and then move on. Now, when he said, hopefully we'll take care of this, I don't think Yvonne Herrera was talking about sitting down, having a sit down with the Brewers and shaking hands and hugging it out.
Right,
I
don't think that's right.
I don't think that's what he meant. I think he was talking about Tony La Russa type justice, right?
Yeah, I mean it just surprised me. I mean, look, I'm not gonna like it's not gonna ruin my week or anything. I why is this thing still being talked about on Thursday? Like I was still talking about it on the show this morning, And it was kind of like a back and forth. He said, she said, like, well, you know, the signs. And then, well, we talked at batting practice. And then there was, no, it was a confrontation at batting practice. No, it was a conversation. No, it was the, I pointed to the ribs. No, the head, the this, like, back and forth. And Pat Murphy's talking about it. I don't know. I just felt like it could have been handled very easily. It's not like they wouldn't think it was coming. You're not trying to hurt somebody. You're putting a baseball into their thigh or their rear end. And you move on. I don't know. I just, I'm not upset about it. And I know, like, people, there are a couple of people, like Bruce is saying, you should say that to the manager on Tuesday. No, I mean, we would just ask him. You just say, like, why wouldn't you just hit somebody? I mean, and look, managers are not going to stand out there and either publicly, folks, they're not going to get out there and be like, you know, I ordered the hit. Did Tony ever in an interview say, yeah, I told him to hit him? He didn't do that. It was just part of the deal, man. It's just part of the game. I don't know. Remember, I told you the story in college baseball last week. Yeah. This was Murray State. So this guy, Ryan Karst, is pitching for Indiana State. He's got a no-hitter going. The best hitter on Murray State is Luke Mastoni. And Mastoni, as a no-hitter is going for Karst, drops down a bunt. The best hitter on the team drops down a bunt and reaches first. And Lance Lynn's like, huh, yeah, that doesn't fly with me, man. And the next time Mastoni came up there, the first pitch, he almost like turned into it. Boom, hits him right here, kind of like in the shoulder, maybe a little higher for my taste, but whatever. And Lynn goes, bunt that. And Mastoni, did he cry about it? Did he whine? Did he look out at the man? No. He put his bat down. He went to first. Game over. No one else talking about it. It's done.
Hey, one of the best Tony La Russa stories he ever told me. You know, him and Lou Piniella were really good friends. They grew up together in Tampa. But obviously very highly competitive, which is an understatement. So the A's and the Mariners would get into it. They had a little bit of like, okay, you hit my guy, I'm hitting your guy. You hit my guy, I'm hitting two of your guys. And this stuff went on and on and on. And it, there was one really ugly game late in the season. There were several hit pitches. So Piniella and La Russa had a sit down and they agreed, look, no more of this. You know, it's a little out of control. You got my word. None of your guys are going to get hit. I mean, if it's something like a curveball that the pitcher doesn't control and a soft curveball hits a guy, that's not hitting a guy. But we're not going after any of your guys. If you promise, you're not going to go after any of our guys. And they shook hands on it. The last game of the season, the Mariners nailed one of the A's best hitters. I don't know if it was McGuire. It might have been. Nailed one of their best two or three hitters. Just nailed them, right? And La Russa's glaring across the field like, hey, we had a deal. What are you doing? Spring training. The first time in the following spring training, after the offseason, Mariners and the A's are playing. Ken Griffey's up. Boom! La Russa has put the word out, and Ken Griffey's like diving to get out of the way of a fastball.
Yeah, I mean,
because he wouldn't let it stand because Piniella broke the deal. It was dishonorable.
Yeah.
You got to protect your family.
It's just part of the game. I'm not like, again, I'm not upset about it. Here comes Zachary. So Zachary's all like, you know, well, no, let me show this one first. So he says, because you guys are talking about it, how about something about, I just said we're going to talk about the offense later.
Be patient,
Zachary. So Zachary says, why didn't you tell him it's because he was throwing a no hitter in the eighth? And then if we hit someone once that was broken up, we would have had a suspension on our hand. All right, Zachary. What? So I don't know what you're talking about, but it does bring up this question to Bernie. So there is some validity to the question, which is if you were to hit somebody, does that create more of an issue? I don't think it does, but does it create more of an issue? Do the umpires then start sending out warnings? And are you doing something that bubbles up more emotion between two rivals? Bernie, to me, I don't think so. I think if you were to hit, let's say, Yelich in the rear end, that's the end of it.
No doubt. And by the way, with all due respect, no one is saying Dustin May in the eighth inning should nail a Brewer for payback. So what, like, why are you even, like, why even bring that into the discussion? Nobody of sound mind is suggesting Dustin May should have ruined his no-hitter, okay? Like, it's in the seventh inning. Oh, okay. Oh, I better hit one of those guys.
Right.
What?
I know.
So we're not saying that, but here's the deal. You know who gave you permission to hit this goofball reliever? You know who gave you permission? Two guys. Pat Murphy went bananas, said it was irresponsible, it was unacceptable, it was embarrassing. He chewed him out. Christian Yelich said something to him. He said, "You just don't do that. We just can't do that kind of thing." You got two guys on their side saying he was way out of bounds. There's your permission to hit one of their guys in the hip or the backside or whatever. They basically gave you permission. So, case closed.
Yeah. I mean, do it, you know, anyway. That's the end of that. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the real issue as to why this team is not playing well, and that is their offense has disappeared, plain and simple. We're going to dissect that and suggest maybe there's a way that you could spark it. We'll get to that in just a moment. It's 1219. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX, back after this.
Bernie Nicholas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Lots of comments coming in. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. Johnny says, I was the one that brought that question to Ali. If there's one fault concerning him, he doesn't protect his players. I seem to remember in past years he did the same thing. Interesting observation. I don't know. Eline jokes that, you know, we would have seen the great traditional bullpens standing around if someone had been hit. That's possible, because it used to be you get hit and then you move on. Somewhere along the line, the past few decades, everybody just sort of walks out onto the field and ends up, you know, shouting at each other. Mitchell says, bigger issue because the team had no fight, got taunted, only scored two runs all series. Brewers sent the Cardinals packing with their tails between their legs. I agree. And then just back to Zachary real quick. If we're going to keep talking about this, any consideration that not hitting someone is a subconscious admission to Ollie doing some weirdo stuff in the dugout? Zachary, I wouldn't say that necessarily. And I appreciate, Zachary, like, I'm not banging on you here. You're a great contributor to the show. You give great comments and questions that get us going. Bernie, I would say that if Uribe hadn't done his little dance, none of this stuff probably gets out. I think probably it's just like this stuff goes on a lot. I mean, managers glare at each other. Things are said behind the scenes. They talk it out. Sometimes they argue behind the scenes about it. It's just this became public because of the Uribe comments after the game, really, and the gestures that he made ahead of time.
I give Ollie credit, and I mean that. I give him credit for being aggressive and taking the initiative to basically tell the Brewers, we know what you're doing. You're relaying signs from the dugout to the hitter, and that's a no-no. That crosses a line. You're not supposed to do that. We see it, so be smart. He pointed to his ribs like, We don't want anyone to get hurt. Is that a subtle threat? You could be taken that way. But my point is, Ollie did step up to basically tell them, knock it off. And the Brewers tried to push back on that because Daniel Vogelbach got in, who's a coach now, he got in Ollie's face at the batting cage yesterday. Yesterday. Mm-hmm. And they had words. So the Brewers tried to come back on Ollie again, and he wouldn't stand down. So I don't want to say that Ollie was being a wimp. I'm not saying that at all. Like, he called the Brewers out, and he did it in a way most managers do. When he thought that they're up to something they shouldn't be doing, he let them know, hey, we see you. We see you. And then he stood his ground, you know, when it became a little bit of a disagreement around the batting cage. We're talking specifically about letting a clown turn to your dugout and go into this lewd, ridiculous, sophomoric, stupid dance and thrust his pelvis towards your dugout And like I said, metaphorically speaking, he basically spat in your dugout, right? That guy's got to go down, man. Or you, if you can't get to him, I mean, someone's got to come out of that dugout and take care of the business.
Yeah, I mean, you either have like an Albert Pujols, which you don't have, who took Kerry Wood deep after he got knocked down, or you take care of one of their guys because Uribe doesn't hit. So that's that. You know, the Cubs series does loom as a big one here. Nick says this is going to be a huge series. They're obviously not playing well, meaning the Cubs. Cardinals aren't either. And if the Cubs punk the Cardinals, Nick says that could be the beginning of the end for this year. He's not wrong. I mean, this is a monster, monster series. And to Justin's point, the Cardinals, he throws some numbers out there. The Cardinals offense is not good. Bernie, what have you analyzed here? What's going on?
Well, first of all, we can zero in on one stat in the Milwaukee series that's been a problem all year, but especially in May. You know, the Cardinals, okay, we all know they scored two runs in three games. There's no need to elaborate on that. That's terrible. But during the series, they had at least some chances, especially yesterday, to score some runs. They were 0 for 17 with runners in scoring position this series. 0 for 17. You get a couple base hits yesterday, you win the game. In key situations, this has been a problem for the Cardinals all year. It was really bad in May. In the month of May, they're hitting 198 with runners in scoring position. That's 14th out of 15 teams in the National League. Overall, the offense is shut down, but that's a big reason because they have there's runs sitting on the table, but they can't scoop them up because they're so bad at hitting with runners in scoring position. But the other thing, they're not walking the way they did in the first month. The power is way down this month. These are all stats and facts. And it's we can figure out the other than the runners without runners in scoring position ailment. Okay. I did something where I can like quantify what this means. And the Cardinals have 1 through 4, and we know who 1 through 4 are. It's Weatherholt, it's Herrera, it's Burleson, it's Walker. Okay, those guys collectively are about 31, as a foursome, they're 31% above the league average offensively. That's the best in the National League. The Cardinals have the best first four hitters in a lineup of any team in the National League, and they're second to the Yankees overall. Now, let's go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You add it all up collectively, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They are 13th. They are 25% below average offensively, which ranks 13th or 14th in the National League. So you have your first four guys as a group are the best in the National League. The rest of your lineup as a group is down there either next to last or 13th out of 15th. Doesn't that tell you a lot right there? You're not getting enough out of the rest of your lineup, period. And that's why the Cardinals this month, they rank 14th in National League in runs. They rank 11th in homers. They 27th overall in runs. They're averaging 3.5 runs per game. They have scored three runs or less in like 61% of their games this month. I mean, that's crazy. You know, they're most of the time they're scoring two or three runs. It's amazing in a way that they're only one game under 500 this month.
It is a concern, and there's no question that this was going on well before they faced Miz and Harrison. You know, we know those two pitchers are great. I get it. I mean, Miz might be the best pitcher in baseball, and Harrison is one of the best lefties going right now. This was going on way before that. It's a trend that is disturbing, and we'll see where it goes. Now, do they shuffle the lineup, or do they go try to find some reinforcements? We will get to that when we come back. Bernie Miklas is with us. Just a little tease there, the Kelly Mars Facebook post. When can we maybe see some call-ups? Is Newt ready? Baez is killing it. It's tough. Send Scott down maybe. It's not easy, says Kelly. We'll see if it's easy to Bernie Miklas when we come back. By the way, if you want to see these comments or if you want to make one, We are on multiple platforms here. We're on X. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on KMOX. We're the Gas House Gang. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Salika Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back on the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. James O'Sullivan's here. Everybody's here. We should get all the producers in here. Sixta and Camp and Hin Camp. Let's get them all in here. Let's see, John Thomas says, I go back to pond scum Mets. Ain't bad to have some bad blood with a team. Cubs, Reds, Mets makes for a fun summer. Bernie and I both go back to that as well. Bernie is a reporter. I was a fan back in the 80s and enjoying that. And, you know, that's absolutely true. In fact, Bernie, the Brewers and Cardinals, the Brewers used to untuck those shirts at the end of the game. That used to tick the Cardinals off to no end, man. Niger Morgan and all those guys. The Brewers are the reason, I contend, the reason that the Cardinals came back in 2011. They were not going to let the Brewers win the National League. They hated them so much. You ask those guys. Hated them. That they ended up winning that World Series in 2011 thanks to the Brewers.
I was watching a YouTube show. It's hosted by Cody Allen, was the closer for the Guardians team that went to the World Series. I think Kevin Pillar might be the other co-host. Chris Carpenter did a long interview with them. I just happened to flip to it on YouTube where he was talking about how much he hated Niger Morgan, and he was saying it with a smile on his face, but he was like, "Oh yeah, I hated that guy.
Yeah,
I wasn't going to put up with anything from that guy."
It's good memories.
It was. I mean, that boy, the Cardinals and the Brewers had a hell of a rivalry, and for the Cardinals to do what they did to them in the NLCS in 2011, they beat the snot out of them in that series. They really did.
Yeah, the Cardinals have had their run-ins with everybody. The Cubs, the Reds, the Mets, the Brewers, the Astros. Although, I don't know if they hated the Astros necessarily, but that was a great rivalry. But there have been some good ones through the years. Bernie, if they're going to beat the Cubs this weekend, they need to score runs. Let me ask you this. It was brought up by Kelly, and you and I talked about it off air. Would they consider Joshua Baez, or is it too early? We've talked about Jimmy Crook's strikeout rate.
Right.
Baez has had a high strikeout rate, as good as he's been, even though he's cut that down recently.
Yeah, first of all, he's on a tear, to say the least. You know, and his May has been much better than his first month of the season. But he hit two home runs the other night. Then last night he came back and hit two more. So he's got four home runs in the last two games. But even before that, he showed signs of cutting down on his strikeouts and was really putting up a very, 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 very good May and was sort of back on track. Now, the strikeout thing was a problem. I think it got as high as about 37% strikeout rate. If you look at it now, it's more like 32%. So he shaved it down. And even though this is a very small sample, it does coincide with this home run barrage that he's on. In the last six games, it's only six games, still got a long way to go to prove it. But his strikeout rate in the last six games, Josh Baez, is about 17.5%. It's like half of what it was. So he looks like he's very, very confident. I think he looks like he knows he figured some stuff out. They got great instructors down there. They got great technology. They have all these tools for hitters. And the other interesting thing about this is that the Cardinals are playing him in center field. Not every day, but they have started to work him into center field. Now, do you think they would just do that arbitrarily? Just kind of like, hey, this ought to be fun. Let's see him run around in center. No, they're Chaim Bloom and Rob Serfolio and Larry Day, they don't do anything willy-nilly. There's a plan behind every move that they make, right?
No, for sure. And the window actually to do it is probably now, because Churchy is down and Lars hasn't come back yet. And I don't know when that's going to be. But, you know, you're getting to the point where you need something. You need some sort of spark. We are in the entertainment business, after all. And something's got to happen there to get this thing going without ruining, obviously, the trajectory of a player. I'm not sure that it hurts somebody to come up. I know we've been saying about Crooks to pump the brakes a little bit.
But I was very big on the idea of, because I went deep into the numbers about, I was like, whoa, not so fast. They don't want him to come up here and strike out. They told him, come on, we got to go. Let's go. You draw walks, it's great. You got power, it's great. You're a smart guy. We know that. You got to cut down on the strikeouts. You just have to do it before we bring you up. Well, Jimmy Crooks has been doing that. So my position on that has changed. It's changed because what I said was, as long as he's striking out 35, 36% of the time, you can't bring him to the majors. But that's no longer the case. He's really curtailed his strikeout issue. So I'm like, okay, game on. I think they could use him at DH. They could use him to catch once or twice a week, whatever. I think Jimmy Crooks has got to be up here at some point between now and the end of the season. And I think Baez, unless he sort of falls back and starts whiffing again all over the place to where you say, okay, he needs more time. I think both of these guys are strong candidates to be here before the end of the season. How soon, I don't know. But, man, if Josh Baez could play respectable center field and could be subbed out, a defensive replacement, late in games or whatever, can you imagine what that would do to stretch out your lineup?
Yeah, no kidding. Seriously. No, really.
If you put him down at the 7 or 8 hole, would you take the pressure off him? Can you imagine all of a sudden you have a guy, which they don't have now. If a pitcher makes a mistake, it's in the gap or it's over the wall. You know, they don't have that right now.
No, they don't. And I do think also, I've felt always this way. They may deny it at times, or they may admit to it at times. But I think when you don't hit well, it does carry over into the field. And when we see this weekend, Leahy, Pallante, Libby. Now Libby's been K-ing guys, but you're going to need some good defense behind those guys against the Cubs, and we can't let them off the hook. Wynn didn't look like himself yesterday. Gorman didn't make a good play yesterday. Torres didn't make a good play yesterday. They were just off. They have been a little off.
It's a tough situation because I know the Cardinals believe they got to maximize their defense, and I understand that totally. But when you have the kind of month that they're having offensively, it's just, look, man, it's just really dreadful. It is what it is. That can't just continue to carry on to the next month and then to the like second part of June into July. This just can't go on like this. Not if you have options. And we're talking options in your own system. You got to at least give them an opportunity, because you just can't keep dragging like this on offense. It's pulling the whole team down.
And then, of course, we saw the Wynn spectacular play and the pick by Burley to keep that no-hitter alive. We're talking about the routine plays that need to be made, and Mason would be the first to tell you. I mean, I saw him shout profanity into his glove after he botched that one that was an error. So it's a tough deal, but he's a human being. We'll see if he can pick it back up this weekend. They're going to have to be on their game this weekend. This is a day of rest for them. Get offline. Don't read anything about what's being said about you or listen to it. Just get after it tomorrow and see if you can take the Cubs down. It's going to be fun.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bago Loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
With Bernie Nicklaus, Tom Ackerman with you, Gas House Gang, final segment here on this Thursday. Always looking forward to talking to my buddy, my big brother, Bernie Nicklaus. Budweiser Toast coming up in just a second. Before I do that, what about Blaze Jordan? They moved him to third base. Is he ready? Is he close? What if he got called into the mix here against the Cubs and hit a 400-foot tater?
Well, you know, here's a guy that Chaim Bloom drafted for the Red Sox, a third-round pick, too. And this is a guy that Chaim Bloom, when they traded Steven Matz to the Red Sox, Chaim Bloom encouraged John Mozeliak to get Blaze Jordan if he could. So Chaim Bloom obviously is a fan of Blaze Jordan. And Blaze Jordan, he is finally kind of found it. You know, it took him a while in the majors. When he got traded, it kind of set him back because he had to adjust and everything. He's putting up really great numbers. And the thing about him is, like, unlike, say, Luke and Baker, Blaise Jordan doesn't strike out. He draws walks. He's got a low strikeout rate. He's got power, like doubles power. He hits some home runs. But he's just a really polished, smooth hitter. He's a right-handed bat. He can play first base. He can play third base. It seems to me there would be a role for him up here. The rest is up to Heim Bloom.
Yeah. Budweiser Toast. This is an ice-cold Budweiser in my hand right here. Ice cold. And I can't wait to be at Anheuser-Busch today with Ozzie Smith and Matt Adams and Al Roboski. We're going to do a roundtable at the Beer Garden from 4:30 to 6:30. Bernie, I know you've got an event you're part of with Chip and Klabe, so appreciate that. A lot of opportunities for people here in downtown St. Louis and downtown West to enjoy some baseball discussion. My Budweiser toast, we brought him up a few times today, is to Tony La Russa. The skipper is one of my all-time favorites to be around to cover. It, you know, I was a young reporter, and he had to teach me how to do it, how to cover this game and understand this game right. He taught me a ton about the game. We had, I know you did, we had some run-ins early on. It became a beautiful relationship that I continue today. I know you've got some great memories of covering Tony.
Can I tell you something that will not surprise you?
What's that?
And I say this smiling, right? Tony La Russa right now, okay, is mad at me. because as he put it, I don't understand you. I'm trying to get in touch with you. You haven't called me back. It's disrespectful. You know, and I'm like, he's right. But part of me actually gets a kick of knowing I can still get Tony mad at me like I did for 16 years when I was a columnist at the Post-Dispatch. I love Tony La Russa, man. It was a privilege to cover him.